Welcome to The Lion's Share. I'm Kimberly with Lion and Lamb Ministries, and we are so glad you joined us today. We are back for part two with our founder and director, Monty Judah. If you didn't catch part one, be sure to go back and watch that. You will learn so many stories from Monty's childhood, his time in the Navy, and his corporate years. Monty, welcome back.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you. And at the end of our first episode, we ended with kind of a cliffhanger, about to introduce someone who really changed your life in ministry. But before we get to that, I want to ask you about how you grew in the church, because you went through the Navigators, you came out of the Navigators, and you were getting into the church life. Talk about that and how you kind of rose up in the ranks of church.
Well, as I shared before, the Navigator organization, great organization. It was, when I was part of it, it was part of a men's military ministry. That was the part I was involved with. And there wasn't room for family, wives, other kinds of things like that. Now, as I understand, the Navigators have expanded beyond that to these present days. But when I was there, I was a young sailor, and I was with other sailors and Marines, other military people. And we would visit churches, but mm-hmm. quite honestly, the whole program was set up for you to individually learn how to walk before the Lord, and you're not typically going to church. You're stationed in the military. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the whole idea of being married and being in the Navigators didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Sure.
We humorously referred to it as the Never Daters. And so when I left the Navigators, then I started getting involved with the church. I joined a local Baptist church at that point, and immediately I discovered that the training I had received for the years I'd been in the Navigators had equipped me to be a pretty serious believer as compared to other people in the church. And then I was successful in meeting my first wife, Lynn, at that time, and got married in that church there, and proceeded to go forward. And my first wife and I, spiritually, why we decided we'd go ahead and go to church, and we were moved to Colorado Springs. We joined a local Baptist church there, became very active with that. And increasingly, you know, my background skills and so forth, why I became Sunday school teacher, helped build some Baptist churches, got involved with the ministry and could work, you know, given my corporate leadership position, plus being a strong believer in the Bible, knowing the basic Bible stories and so forth, why I fit right into the leadership of a local Baptist church, you know, helping to build it, and then eventually into a large Baptist church that was in the Colorado Springs area, senior adult teacher. Well, in the course of that, I had what they called a call to ministry, a formal call to ministry. The key word for me was the word bondservant. That was going to prove to be my future.
Yes.
Was because that's not being called to the pastorate. That is a whole new level of dedication to the Lord that the Navigators had never quite explained to me, but I came to understand. And so I rose up in the Baptist church, became a leading member of the Baptist church, the senior adult teacher, recognized as clergy, began to do the work, the ministry of the gospel, did weddings and funerals and all of the normal clergy things that are associated with it. And that was the ground that I was in as newly married and just starting to have children.
Yes. But I think you began to feel that something was missing. Something wasn't quite right. I think you've talked before about how you were very busy in the church. You were doing all the work that you thought you were doing, but you weren't quite fed, as we like to say.
Well, the best way I characterize this with other people, it's like you're going there and you're still hungry, and you're going there and you're still thirsty. and you know there's something more, but you're not quite getting it at that, although you're active, you know, in the church. Right. You're there when the doors are open. You're participating in the program, and, but it's still not yet satisfying. So I experienced that, and I know when people experience that, what they're referring to and things like that. Plus, there's the other, which is a lot of churches tragically go through splits and discontent with one another. And I saw that activity. I saw where they're basically breaking the rules of fellowship, of getting along with one another. Those were discouraging elements. And those were additional elements that said, it's got to be more than this. Yes. It's got to be better than this. For that, for to be active in the faith, this is not what this is supposed to be.
Right.
And I had that sense of it.
Yes. And now that brings us to our cliffhanger moment, where a very special person was going to come into your life and really change your life tremendously.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it began first with one of the things that I used to do when I traveled and was in the business world. Was especially when I get on an airplane and go on a business trip, that was my best Bible reading time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get on these long flights, well, I'd pull my Bible out of my briefcase and I'd read a lot of Bible. And there came a moment, this was in 1984, there was a 2-week period of time where all of a sudden I opened the Bible up and just the understanding of the scriptures just come flooding into me. It wasn't a process. This is the part that was so stunning. It was suddenly, I opened the Bible and it was there. It was like it had been plugged in. I was simply going to the Bible to verify that's what was there. I have since learned that God can communicate that way. That's a it's a method called knowledge. Where he can just give you the information, plug it into you, and you've got it.
Right.
You don't get it through study. You don't get it through a process. Somebody doesn't walk up and give it to you. You just suddenly, all of us, have it.
Yes.
Well, what the Lord gave me in the course of that 2 weeks was a whole new understanding of the faith.
Wow.
It's almost like I learned the whole Bible over again. A whole new understanding of, about the prophetic, what is happening in the world, what's going to be happening in the world. And as a result of it, I had enough training in the scripture to know any time that you think you've come to understand something spiritually, that you believe that God has given you something, you know, there, you know, God cautions you, and the wise way to deal with it is you need to go get confirmation.
Yes.
And so I had received that basic principled training. And so I knew, even though I'd had this very interesting experience, and I suddenly had all this information, and it was definitely different than what I'd ever heard before and different from anybody I'd heard before, I didn't want to go running around and saying, hey, well, you know, let me tell you what God told me. You know, right. I'd seen that before.
Yes.
But I knew I needed to get confirmation, so I prayed to God right after that. And I said, now, I believe, Lord, that you have given me something, but I'm going to need confirmation. Mm-hmm. And I said, I need you to send a man to me, or send me to a man, and he needs to help me to sort some of this out.
Yeah.
And I said, I've got some pretty tough, I remember the prayer exactly, I have some pretty tough questions to ask here, so he needs to be a pretty stout fellow. He needs to be somebody that I can use for confirmation purposes.
Yes.
Well, having issued that prayer, and God tends to answer my prayers in about 2 weeks, it was about 2 weeks after that that there was, my mother happened to mention that there was a man coming that was going to speak Sunday night at one of the local churches there, and his name was Eliezer Urbach. He was a Jewish believer.
Wow.
And a lot of what the Lord had showed me dealt with Israel and the Jewish people. Well, I said, well, I'm going to go hear what he has to say. And so I walk in, and here's this man, Eliezer Urbach. He looked a little bit like Menachem Begin, maybe a slightly dumpier version of him.
Yes.
And he was sharing, as a representative of the American Board of Missions to Jews, which is now Chosen People Ministries. And he was giving testimony as a Jewish believer. And he blew a shofar.
Wow.
And I was intrigued because there were certain elements of what he was talking about that was some of the things the Lord had given to me. Mm-hmm. And I was going, hey, maybe this guy might be. And I walked up to him afterwards and I said, Eliezer, I said, I would like to have the opportunity to sit down and chat with you if I could. And he said, well, that's fine. He said, what's your name? And I said, Monty Judah. And he said, where'd you get this name? I said, from my father's, just like you got your name. Yes. And he said, we need to talk. So that was kind of, there was the guy that I had prayed for.
Yes.
Eliezer invited me to his home. He introduced me for the first time to Sabbath. We talked about the commandments of the Lord. We talked about the Torah. He took me to a Judaica shop. He got me my first Humash, a Torah study book. Got my first Talit. It basically helped me to step up to certain things that I was very intrigued with, that I wanted to be a part of, but I didn't know a thing about.
Right.
So he introduced all of those things to me. And as a result, he introduced me to a whole world of other Messianic believers.
Wow.
And I discovered there was a whole lot of people like me, mm-hmm, that had gone through the same transition. They had been part of the church, had come out and become a part of what became later known as the Messianic movement. It has different names, Hebrew Roots Movement, Hebrew Christians, you know. In those days, so some of the churches used to call them completed Jews. Mm-hmm. There was a whole bunch of things back 40 years ago.
Sure.
That used to be said about trying to explain, how do we have this Jewish person who's now a believer of Jesus? Mm-hmm. And my transition, of course, I had not come out of the Jewish community.
Right.
I had been in the Christian community, but now I was coming back to identify with my heritage,
yes,
as a Jewish person. And so I was in the mix of all the people that are going through those transitions.
Yes. And, you know, Eliezer was quite an interesting person.
He was.
In his own right, he was a survivor of the Holocaust. He had quite an amazing story, which I know he shared with you. We have a clip here, actually, that was done years ago of Eliezer telling his own story. Let's watch this, and then we'll talk about it.
Horse traders came to stay with us, Jewish. Many were Jews. Because we kept kosher, they ate with us, they stayed overnight, and then in the morning they went to the market. September 1, 1939, the Nazis entered our hometown. And life changed from day to night. Of course, you might realize what has happened to the Jewish people. Many fled. Those who stayed, the older one, women and so on, were gradually taken to concentration camp and done with. At the outbreak of the Second World War, I was 17 years old. Life was pretty good. And then September 1, 1939, the Nazis entered our hometown. And I ran away with five Polish friends. And we went way east. First by train and walking. Then the Nazi armies already caught us, caught all the refugees and told everybody go back home. So I came home after 4 or 5 weeks and found that the Nazis have taken over all the Jewish stores. Also, we were sent Jewish men, whatever Jewish people were there, we were sent to do physical labor. We were sent to cover the trenches. There was anti-air trenches that we dug it before the war. A week before the war, we had to cover them. From 16 to 60, all men, Jewish men, were kicked out, were told to leave, were taken to cars, to the railroad, and brought to the Russian border. And then they opened the cars and the railroad cars and started shooting, so the Jews started running. I had a Jewish friend who brought my brother to me. And we were together for till 1940 summer, when the Russian exiled us to Siberia. There were 1 million Jewish people, refugees from Western Poland to the East. They didn't know what to do. They put us on the train and sent us to Siberia. But in a way, they saved our life, because if we would have stayed in German-occupied Poland, there was no help. So from Siberia, we were released after 1 year. I tried to join the Polish army. I wasn't accepted. And so my brother and I, we tried to escape from Russia into Afghanistan. We were apprehended on the Afghanistani border. We were given 2 years of a prison term. My brother died after a year. I survived after 22 months of Soviet and Russian prison. I moved to Brazil. My uncles invited me to Brazil, and I worked in a factory. I was witnessed by a gentleman who worked in the factory, a younger man, and he has invited me to his church. After a few weeks, I did go to his church. And that first night I was a Saturday night. I watched a movie. That movie moved my heart. I professed to believe that Jesus is my Savior. It was May 15, 1955. How do I remember? Because he dated the Bible that he gave me in Portuguese. I still have the Bible. Here in this house you will not see crosses, but you see mezuzah on both doors. Anybody comes here, it's a Jewish home. But Jesus is our Messiah. I became convinced that there is no other one. Israel now has no sacrifice. It's the religion of works, the 613 commandments, the so-called Tariyat Mitzvot. We are told to do right, to live right. Maybe we get there somehow, but there is no assurance of hereafter. When I have asked many of my Jewish brethren, where do you go after you die? All they could say, 6 feet below, underneath. So there is no hope for more than this life. I did no idea why I survived. I was not so much crafty and strong, but I have come to a clear belief that God let me survive to call me to be his servant. That's all. And I'm sure of that.
So there we see Eliezer telling us about how, you know, he came through the Holocaust, he came through South America, which you talked about before, how, you know, he came from South America into the United States and was told, you know, go to the middle of the country, I think is, how did that story go?
As he shared with me, he was stationed in Denver, Colorado to win the North American continent to this position of that Jews can become believers of Yeshua as well. Eliezer was involved in several men's lives there along the Front Range of Colorado, as well as around the nation. And there were several of us that were in the Colorado, New Mexico area that were directly affected by him. But he also had a voice in others. In fact, as I understand it, Moshe Rosen, the guy who started Jews for Jesus, lived in Eliezer's home for a while, and was before he made his way to California. So, and he was well known by many of the leaders of the Messianic movement, some of the original leaders of the organization. So they all knew and respected Eliezer, and he had an impact on a whole bunch of us.
Yes, he did. And in fact, there's a group of men that you are still in touch with. I know one has passed, but you're still in touch with them. And why don't you tell us about how you started that first congregation?
Well, we were in Colorado Springs. There's a brother of mine, Ira Brower. He got saved about the time that I met Eliezer and got involved with him. he had been in the Estes Park Boulder area, and he got saved. He moved down to Colorado Springs. Eliezer contacted me and said, hey, he's a new believer. He's a Jewish guy. Hook up with him and disciple him. See, Eliezer knew, he knew about my navigator background. Yeah. He knew about I could disciple a guy. So I got a hold of him to kind of mentor him a bit. And at the same time, he kind of ministered to me because he was able to explain a lot of cultural things to me that I had not been a part of.
Sure.
We got connected with another fellow that was down in the Pueblo, Colorado area, who happened to be a secret Jewish believer. He was the president of the synagogue down in Pueblo. He was a cantor. He would travel around the state, was a cantor for a lot of the Jewish services, but he was a secret believer. He just didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And once he met Eliezer and so forth, why we got a hold of him. And so the three of us, a guy that was synagogue trained, a guy that's culturally trained, and me trained in the Messiah.
Yes.
We all kind of ministered to each other and helped each other. And we formed the first Messianic congregation there in Colorado Springs.
Wow.
Together. As the years went on, why each of us broke off and went in different directions. Bill Berg went up into Denver and was a co-pastor up there at Roa Israel. Ira made his way to Florida, had a very successful ministry down there with mm-hmm. congregations. My career took off. I went to California, then to Oklahoma, and then I started Lion of Lamb Ministry. So, you know, we all had our own ministries that were born out of the experience of being together.
It's always interesting to me how God will bring people together for the purpose of, as you said, you all ministered to each other. You each had a component of what each other needed. And then from that, as you grew in your faith, then you were able to springboard into the next phase of ministry.
Exactly. It kind of rounded out different things that we needed to understand and be able to relate to. As we went forward. And that you're absolutely right. In fact, at the time that we were there together, we were cognizant of the fact of what God was doing with us. And so that opened ourselves up to receive from one another, you know, that he made his contribution, Bill made his, I made mine, and we got along with each other well, because we all saw each had value in helping one another to be established in the Lord.
Yes, and folks, you'll need to stay tuned because we will be having Ira Brower on a future episode of The Lion's Share, so you'll want to make sure that you stay tuned for that.
And at that broadcast, you'll hear Ira and I talk, reminiscing a little bit about our days with Eliezer and the impact he had on
That's
us.
That's right.
You know, at that time.
Yeah, an amazing man who's left a wonderful legacy in the three of you and numerous others, I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So now I want to get to a little bit of the wife side of things. So how did Lynn respond to, hi, honey, we're changing to Messianic now?
Well, that's an interesting story because here I am. I'm in the corporate world traveling, and Lynn knows I've met Eliezer, knows I have an interest in this. She's not quite sure what to do with it. When the subject had come up, well, I'll tell you how the subject came up. She happened to see my reservations for a business trip I was getting ready to go on. And down on the notes, it showed that I had asked for a kosher meal.
Oh.
And she said, how long have you been ordering kosher meals on your flights? And I said, well, for some time. You know, I put it into the travel agent and so forth. Well, are you saying that you don't want us to eat pork anymore? And I said, well, I don't know if you've noted it, but we haven't been eating pork for a long time. Well, and I'll never forget, she goes, well, you mean to tell me I'm never going to have a BLT again? Bacon, lettuce, and
yes.
Tomato. And I said, well, no, we're going to have TBLTs. And she said, what's that? I said, that's turkey, bacon, lettuce, and tomato.
There you go.
And so she goes, okay, well, I'll do the kosher thing then.
As long as you can have a BLT.
That was the moment where we broke the ice, mm-hmm. And she said, well, what are you learning? And then I kind of opened up completely to her everything I'd been learning. And so she began to get it, understand what I was doing, what it was about. And she joined right in.
Yeah.
Right in with me.
That's wonderful. So you're in Colorado Springs, your career takes off, and then eventually you come to Oklahoma.
Yes.
And how did that transition?
Well, my career out in corporate brought me to Oklahoma as my last stint in the corporate world. Oklahoma is the operational support facility for a big weather radar program, mm-hmm. For NOAA. And since I was a radar guy, you know, in my background, it's a big Doppler radar. Well, it fit right into my background and expertise. And I was brought here initially to do a one-man study on the program for the directorship. I did it. I brought some issues up. They wanted to bring me out here to resolve those matters. And so my last stint was actually working here, resolving those issues, completing those issues. And that's when then the Lord said, okay, you're going to go to work for me now.
Yes, and that was actually going to be my next question, because I know from here working here that you've told us that when you were here in Oklahoma was when the Lord sort of grabbed hold of you and said, okay, it's time for you to step into ministry. Tell us about that.
Well, that was in 1996, and yeah, that's what he said. And by the way, the contract that we had here locally was coming to a conclusion. So it was kind of a logical conclusion. I was going to move on and go somewhere else or whatever. But the Lord kind of jumped into that. And so I knew several months in advance of the ending with the contract that I was going to go to work for the Lord. Now, I had no idea what exactly that was going to be.
Right.
But essentially, when the day came that I stepped away from my secular career, I always share with everybody that I basically stepped away with a wife, two small kids, and one computer, but I knew I was going to be working for the Lord.
That's right.
And there was about a 40-day period. In fact, it wasn't about, it was 40 days, that I'm really just kind of, okay, Lord, what do you want to do? How do you want to proceed? Mm-hmm. And at the conclusion of the 40 days, I knew I was then going to start an organization called Lion of Lamb Ministries.
Wow.
And it was going to be messianic teachings, not only Torah teachings and teaching the Torah to people on Fridays and Sabbaths, mm-hmm. But it was also going to be a prophetic ministry. I was going to be sharing some of the same information that had been shown to me prophetically early on. Mm-hmm. And so I got a Torah study going, helped to get some messianic congregations going here in the Oklahoma City area. Was completely full-time, you know, doing it. Mm-hmm. I cashed in all of my retirement that I had built up. I had
yes.
a famous 401k program.
Yes.
And I cashed out on it, and basically I started Lion of Lamb Ministries for the first 14 months cashing in, you know, my retirement, mm-hmm. you know, for that. And at the end of the 14 months, that's when the ministry actually took off, where people began to contribute, mm-hmm. donate to it, and so forth. I had to exhaust all of my resources mm-hmm. Before the Lord. I had to commit myself
yes.
all the way to the Lord. It was in that transition moment. I remember I got called by some friends back at corporate headquarters, and they found out that I'd stepped away from my secular career, had gone full-time ministry, and literally they called up and said, what are you doing?
You know, are you crazy?
What are you, nuts? You know, I mean, you're at the top of your game, you know.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was being invited to join other guys to start new companies. I was staring into consulting contracts where I could be sold as a consultant. All of these were highly lucrative,
yes.
and would have my personal financial plan that I had working at that point, I was planning on retiring at age 55, you know, and living off the principal.
Sure.
But I cashed it all into the Lord. And as I told them, I said, well, I don't make as much money as I used to make before, but my retirement program is out of this world.
Literally.
And I work for the best boss I've ever worked for.
Amen to God. That.
And I get to work with the nicest people in the world, people that love God. And I said, quite honestly, I couldn't turn the job down.
There you
it was too good a job offer.
That's right.
And so that's how I ended up going to work for the Lord, so to speak.
That's amazing. So now, again, I want to take the wife's perspective. What was Lynn's reaction to, we're leaving corporate, honey?
Well, Lynn had done the biblical wife thing way back when we got married about wheresoever the Lord tells you to go, that's what I will do. There was one moment there, this kind of a story about her.
Yes.
One moment there where things were looking a little bleak on the contracts, and I happened to check around the company, and there was some work that was down in the Huntsville, Alabama area. This contracting work fades around, moves around the country. Mm-hmm. And I went home and I said, Lynn, I said, what do you think about Huntsville, Alabama? And she said, now, when we got married, I pledged to you that I would go anywhere that you go.
Right.
And I said, that's right. And she said, Huntsville doesn't qualify as anywhere. So I found out she was committed to me, but that there were other qualifications.
But wasn't going to do it.
But that was it. But when I made the step away from the secular career in the ministry, she was right there with me. 100%.
Awesome.
She knew what it was, and she was in agreement with it.
That's
she,
wonderful.
her confidence in the Lord was as great as mine was at that point. And we had experienced ministry and helping other people. I, as I said, I had a pretty good job career. We had never been in need, and we had been able to minister and help others in the past. So that's what she had seen. She's seen, hey, the Lord takes care of, take care of us.
Yes.
And that basically that's what we believed would happen and so forth.
That's wonderful that she was able to just join you right from the start.
She was 100%. Right there in the saddle with me. And we were going forward. There was never any hesitation on her part.
That's wonderful. Well, now we're to the point where you are launching into ministry, and you tell the story of in right in the beginning there of your ministry, you had an occasion to be invited to Texas to share a teaching with a small group.
Correct.
But something interesting happened.
Yeah, we helped get a congregation going in the OKC area, and we were involved with it. And I was writing the little Yavo newsletter. I had gone to the Lord and said, Lord, what do you want me to do? You know, I have all these skills. I could do television programs, radio programs, write books, blah, blah, blah. And he had given me a green light only to start a little monthly newsletter. Mm-hmm. So I had started that. Well, there was a group that was down in the Dallas area. It was some ladies who were studying the book of Revelation, they were studying prophecy, and somehow or another, they heard about me, and they heard some of the stuff, and they actually made a trip up to my house and sat in my dining room and asked a whole series of questions, and I answered their questions, and there was these three ladies, and they went back, and then they set it up and said, would you be willing to come down here and speak to our group? And they had told me earlier that their group was about 30 ladies that get mm-hmm. together and study. And I said, well, of course, first time I was being invited to go someplace. And
sure.
I decided to take my wife with me because it was going to be this Bible study with 30 ladies. And
yes.
So we get down there and we're having this nice dinner. And my wife walks up to me and says, now, what is this thing that we're supposed to be doing? I said, well, these 30 ladies doing the Bible study, they want me to come down and answer some questions for mm-hmm. them. No, that's not what's going on here. I said, well, what's going on here? Said, well, we're going to go to the Biblical Arts Center here in Dallas, Texas. There's 300 plus people coming to hear you speak tonight.
Wow.
And I, what? And I remember I walked into the place. There's people everywhere, standing room only. And I remember saying to the Lord, I said, well, Lord, I don't have anything prepared for these people. Is there something you wanted to share with these people? You know, and so forth. And I was introduced and I was brought up, and the first thing they asked me to do was there was a Shavuot time frame.
Yes.
So they asked me to say the blessing over the cup and the bread, you know, for the holiday. And I did. You know, I did it in Hebrew and canted it and so forth. And they gave me the microphone and said, go ahead and share. Well, that was the first public time in which that I literally got up in front of a bunch of people and the Lord took over.
Wow.
And that particular presentation is called Here is Wisdom. And I spoke for about 45 minutes. And it, needless to say, it kind of rocked the place.
Mm-hmm.
There were three basic points that I made in it. I talked about, I said, I'm going to give you a choice. Do you want all of the weapons and ammunition that you can possibly carry, or would you like to have a 9-foot angel with a flaming sword? Who do you want to defend you? How do you want to defend yourself?
Yeah.
How about you can have all the reverse osmosis water kits, canteens that you want, or I'll give you a God who can make water come out of a rock. Which would you prefer? I'll give you all the MREs and all the food you can carry and all the dehydrated you can possibly have, or else I'll give you a God who can make manna come as the dew in the morning. Which would you prefer? Well, the message was, if you choose the Lord, it meets all of your future needs.
That's
all of
right.
It answers all of the threats,
yes,
that people are fearful of in the future. And one of the things that caused that message to be successful is there's a whole room of people that are full of fears.
Yes.
Fears of the future. Fears about the prophetic. Oh, my gosh, what are we going to do?
Right.
Well, I got up and I spoke about, you know, God is the Savior. He's delivered. This is what he's done in the past. Surely this is what he will do for us, of those of us that have faith in him.
That's right.
And quite honestly, they hadn't heard somebody stand up and speak like the God of the Old Testament and what he will do. Now, they recorded that message and got it on a cassette tape. It was right at that time, I got to share this part. It was,
yes,
right at that time, I was really questioning, you know, here I'm starting this Lion and Lamb Ministries, and I mean, what can I possibly do? And I sat down with the Lord and I said, Lord, look, let's have an honest conversation here. I'm a pebble splash in a sea of ideas. There's all kinds of voices out here that are teaching, and who am I,
right,
that I would wade into this and be of any consequence or benefit to anybody? And it was, you know, just real truthful humility. And I said to the Lord, I'm a pebble splash in a sea of ideas. But the God answered me in my conversation. And he said, yeah, Monty, you are just a pebble splash. But see, I can take that splash, make that into a wave.
That's right.
And send it across the ocean to a distant land. And when it gets there, it can be a tsunami.
That's right.
Well, I didn't realize that first opportunity to speak, there was a tsunami that hit Dallas-Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
And very shortly thereafter, I was invited back multiple times, spoke many times at many different locations. Several revivals broke out in several big churches. I got hauled in by the pastors wanting to know who in the world I am.
What is this message?
And the message that I'm giving is one of encouragement,
yes,
that regardless of what you think, God is going to deliver. And he's, by the way, he's going to be doing something similar to what he did with the children of Israel,
yes,
coming out of Egypt.
That's right.
And it was along those lines. And basically, the ministry got started. And all of a sudden, now people were making contributions to the newsletters.
Yeah.
You know, going out to many, many people, and all of a sudden, instead of it being my old Christmas card list for the database, it turned into 3,000, 5,000,
wow,
7,000 people to send the newsletter to, and it kind of took off from there. And then I got multiple speaking engagements from that, yeah, point on, you know, to go out.
Sure. It must have been, it must have been quite the change from what you were expecting. You didn't expect, first of all, to be speaking in front of all those people, and secondly, you didn't expect the impact that that message would have.
Well, I didn't. I knew God wanted me to do it. I had put no expectation on what exactly that was going to be. I'm literally, okay, Lord, what do you want to do?
Right.
And I have discovered that's the best way for me to operate ministry. I get up each day and, Lord, what do you want to do? You know, what do you want to do with these people? What do you want to do with this person?
Yes.
Whatever the case. And we just follow along with whatever the Lord leads me to do. And I learned that he kind of preps the place and he sets people up and he gets them ready to receive, you know, what I may have to share and things like that. So I can tell that I'm really part of what the Lord is doing with a lot of people. And I have since discovered the Lord's very involved with all of our lives. And I'm just a part, along with a whole bunch of other people. We're just parts of encouraging people, you know, and the Lord for the days that we live in.
That's right. And the days to come.
And the days to come.
Yes. So you were in working out of your home. The newsletter was going out. What was it like then to go from being a home-based ministry to actually getting an office space, getting a few employees? That's quite a transition to make.
Well, At first I got the employees and they were at my house.
Oh, wow.
And then I, there was a loop in the zoning laws. My neighbors started complaining about the number of cars that were parked around my house because I had employees coming in my house. Mm-hmm. And I had basically reshaped my house to where that there was a working table and offices, and I had employees that I had brought in, I didn't want to violate the zoning laws, and so I said, well, I need to get an office, you know, and so basically I was kind of forced to get out of my house and get into an office because of the need for a place for employees to work at. So the ministry got to the point where I had to answer a lot of mail. I had to maintain the database. I had to maintain the other functions and the materials that I was producing. And, you know, you have the accounting. You have to take care of all this stuff when you start operating. So that we actually got an office space. And by the way, the offices that we have here at Lionel Ministries are the original offices, although we've picked up some other buildings around it to add to it. But it was a place that we could provide employees to come and work and put equipment in. We started making copies of, at that point, cassette tapes, and which then moved into CDs and DVDs, and we have a video studio now, and all of the other media things that we've grown into and done with it. You know, our newsletter has gone from a black and white photocopy into a full color little magazine. So all of those growing elements, we needed a professional facility to be able to. And so what we did was we were able to secure some buildings in light industry area here in Oklahoma and retrofit the inside of the buildings to do what we needed it to do.
Yes.
So we've set up our offices and workspace here.
Yes, indeed.
And a workspace for employees to come to and adequate parking and so forth.
So that your neighbors don't have to worry with all the cars.
Yeah, and so that the house is like a regular house in the neighborhood with a regular family that lives there.
That's right. Now you can go home and it's a home and not the office.
right. And the only time that they'd see a whole bunch of people is when we have a holiday party or we have guests over and things like that.
That's right. Like normal people.
Right, exactly.
Well, I know as your ministry grew, you began to go to Israel yourself and then lead tours to Israel. What were some of the events or places that really impacted you in your time in Israel?
Yeah, I always knew that I wanted to go to Israel as a continuation of my own personal studies, as well as, you know, I wanted the experience of going to Jerusalem and praying to the Lord there. And the very first time I get to go to Israel, which this is back in 96, I decided to go not taking a tour or being part of a tour. I went with some other men, spiritual men, and we went over independently because I wanted to meet believing brethren in the land. I wanted to kind of see the sights on my own. I didn't want to have to be teaching. I wanted to take it in myself. So I had some other brethren who assisted me in that. And we made the trip over. Now, that was a a very interesting trip, because whereas before I've had these other interesting experiences with the Lord that's kind of guided me, my first trip to Israel also had its own interesting experiences Wow. with the Lord. Beginning with getting lost the first night
Oh, no.
in Tel Aviv and not being able to find where we're supposed to go.
Oh, dear.
We're supposed to stay at this youth hostel. And we, you know, we wanted to stay locally with other believers. We didn't want to stay in the hotels and other things like that. And, you know, here we are, it's raining, and we're in this gas station in Tel Aviv, and we're not quite sure whether we're going to be sleeping in the car or where we're going to be at.
Mm-hmm.
And asking the Lord, I said, Lord, we need to find this youth hostel, and we cannot find it. Maps or whatever, we need to find it, and could you help us out? And you know, I'm praying, you know, about this. Mm-hmm. And so we get out of the car at the gas station, we're filling the gas tank, I'm going to use the restroom, and this van pulls up to the other side of the stall of the gas station, and on the side of the van, it's the name of the youth hostel that we're supposed to be staying at.
Oh my goodness.
So we said, we'll follow him.
Yes.
So the Lord sent the van there,
you go.
There to pick
he
us up.
He sent the rescue squad for you. Right.
So that was the first incident. And there was another incident that we got up into the Haifa area, and we did have hotel reservations. We had been up on in the Druze village. It's up near up north of Haifa, where the Elijah thing is at.
Yes.
And we had seen that earlier in the day. And as we were going through this Druze village, I had this sense from the Lord. He wants me to see something. And again, I asked them, stop the car. Please stop the car. We're supposed to see something. And we pulled into this Paz gas station. That was the brand of it was. Mm-hmm. And I got out and I said, look around, guys. The Lord wants us to see something here. And we're looking around and see anything? Do you notice anything? Anything stand out? Nope, nothing stood out. No. Okay, Monty's, you know, losing it. And, you know, maybe Monty's full of adrenaline being in the land of Israel. You know, his imagination's running off with him, whatever the case might be. Well, that night when we're down in the city of Haifa, we suddenly discover our hotel reservations that we did have planned fell through.
Oh, dear.
So our host down there is trying to find a place for us to stay that night. Believe me, it worked out later on. We had places to stay. But the first couple of days in Israel, this was what was happening. And he finally locates a place and he says, hey, I got your reservation. However, it's very difficult to find. I don't even know if I can even give you the directions to it. It's up in the Druze village up above by the Elijah thing, and it's across the street from a Paz gas station.
That's exactly where you
are. And I'm going, Lord showed it to us earlier today. We know exactly where to go.
Wow.
I mean, we had those moments.
Yes.
Where, and we just continue to walk through. And there were other things that other people experienced and along the way as we went along. There's no question whatsoever. God knew I was in the land. He was showing me things. He was walking with me in the land. And so it was a extremely memorable trip. Now, at the time it was happening, it all seemed very natural, nothing significant, nothing to write home about, you know, kind of thing. It wasn't until we got back and I was being asked, hey, tell me about your trip to Israel, that I start relaying on what transpired. And, oh, my gosh, everybody hears the testimony of what happened. It's like, well, that's spectacular. That's unbelievable how God
That's right.
did that for you. And so that was very, very profound for that to happen to me, because that was right at the time Lionel Lamb Ministries is now, we've exhausted all of my retirement funds.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm totally dependent upon the Lord and the mm-hmm. donations that would That's be coming right. in for the needs of my family and the ministry. And we have this incredible experience that God's showing me that he's leading me along and
yes.
he knows where I'm at and what's going on and he'll guide me and take care of me.
That's right.
You know, wherever I need to go. So that was a very memorable experience early on
wow.
in ministry. And in the midst of other people who didn't necessarily like the fact that I wasn't reinforcing the pre-tribulation rapture, I had a different mm-hmm. point of view from that. And I got a lot of criticism from that. Got a lot of criticism from some of the other messianic leaders who they didn't like the fact that I had gone out kind of cold turkey mm-hmm. and people had responded to me in a very positive way. They were a little bit envious, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And they decided to be objectionable about that. And so we had those kinds of frustrations going on at the same time. But
yes.
here's the Lord confirming what he wants me to do and telling me that he's with me and yes. so forth. So that was very significant in keeping me on track and keeping me encouraged and
indeed.
Keeping me going.
Thankfully, yes.
Yes.
Indeed. Well, over the years, I know you've met many, many leaders and teachers, from the famous to the not so famous.
Right.
Who are a couple that stand out to you, besides Eliezer Urbach, of course, but who are some others that stand out to you that were significant in your teaching?
Well, I'd have to mention early on, one of the guys that was helped to confirm a lot of the theology and the doctrine was a man by the name of Dr. Dan Juster. He wrote that book, Jewish Roots. Mm-hmm. I saw that book when it was in manuscript form. Mm-hmm. And that echoed a lot of the things that I had come to understand, you know, early on in the 80s. But not so much my Messianic Jewish brethren, but other men that I became involved with and began to co-labor with. And there was a number of them that joined forces with me and worked with me. One in particular who became my operations manager for many years and really helped build the ministry technically by bringing computer technology in and getting the databases up to go was a guy by the name of Phil Vellekamp. And Phil Vellekamp worked with me for 13 years and really moved the technology of this organization forward and helped to get computers here working and doing instead of all kinds of employees. The sheer number of people that we're dealing with, first on a state basis, then on a regional basis in the United States, now world basis, had he not laid that groundwork for all of the technical stuff that we do here, we wouldn't have been able to bear the load,
right?
You know, for it. And he helped me in a lot of the vendor contracts and so forth. We began to develop an event called the Feast of Tabernacles.
Yeah.
And I was led by the Lord to do that, completely different than the way I had understood Sukkot and the Feast of Tabernacles to be done. We actually encouraged people to leave their house, come out, camp with us for 8 days.
Yes, we do.
We found the campground here in Oklahoma, and Phil was instrumental in working with me to set the operation up for tents, sound, lighting, musicians, and
yep.
as I had gotten around in the ministry and met many people, we were able to bring worship teams in, other speakers in, you know, to be a part of it. Another man that was partnered with me that very strong is Eddie Chumney. I met Eddie Chumney back in 96, and he and I have a very good spiritual relationship between mm-hmm. the two of us, his love of the Word of God, mine. I love spending time with Eddie because when we want to talk about the scriptures, neither one of us has to open our Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
We can just refer to various phrases, and I know where he's talking about, and he knows where I'm talking about it. But
yes.
we talk about deep concepts of the Lord.
Yeah.
We talk about and he and I have worked on the whole two-house teaching about who the house of Israel is versus the house of Judah, how that all works, that future coming together, the final redemption
yes.
That comes together in the ministry, the greater exodus. And of late, you know, we've done joint work, and he's done the lion's share of it
mm-hmm.
For the Zadok calendar.
Yes.
And in fact, he's one of the guys here on the lion's share interview that you'll get a chance to see.
That's right.
Eddie and I have had an ongoing relationship, a deep brotherly relationship. He's probably the closest confidant spiritually in the scriptures with me for him. So there's the Lord's provided some interesting. I'm sure I've forgotten other key people that I didn't mention. But to answer your question quickly, wait, those are some key people who've been a part of what I've done here.
Yes, and with Eddie, we know you guys have continued to partner, teach and preach together, work together for all these many years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the Paul and Luke relationship a little bit you hear about in the Bible. I've always said that Eddie's kind of the modern day version of the Apostle Paul running around.
Yeah.
Very knowledgeable of the scriptures
and
so forth.
Yes.
And understands the deep concepts of the scripture.
Yes, indeed. Well, now I want to move to more of a somber issue, but something that definitely impacted you and had it was a critical time in your life several years ago. Lynn became ill, and the situation with that really was life-changing for you. Can you talk about that a little bit with us?
Yeah, that was 7 years ago from this point. And she got this cough and took her into the doc, and the doc took an x-ray, then a CT scan. And then we came to this appointment that we were going to talk about the CT scan. And that's when the doctor announced that she was stage 4 lung cancer.
Wow.
And literally had months to live, and just it was stunning and shocking. And I will tell you that a couple of weeks before that, I had had this ominous feeling, and I had spoken with Lynn about it. I said, Lynn, I said, I have a sense from the Lord that we're going to separate. I said, do you have sensed anything? Do you? And I said, I don't like that feeling.
Yeah.
And I said, and she was, I remember smiling at me and says, no, I don't have that feeling. And I said, okay, good. And I'm just going to ignore it. Well, lo and behold, then I found out what the Lord had done. He was, and I know when the doc said, stage 4 lung cancer, I remember immediately looking at Lynn and then talking to the Lord and saying, is this what we're doing, Lord?
Yeah.
Because you're going to take her from me and. Because, you know, she was like a full-blown partner.
Sure.
And I don't mean just partner wife-wise. I mean, she was an integral part of the ministry organization administratively. Her spiritual gift was administration, and she was able to do tremendous things here at Lionel Lamb and helping to establish things, especially the registration database for our events and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first thing she said to me was, well, I guess you're going to have to get yourself a new wife. And I said to her, dear, I don't have enough time left to retrain another one. I'm not making that. That's the conversation.
Yes, bless her.
Well, the Lord was very merciful at that point, whereas the oncologist had said, you need to call your family in right away.
Wow.
In truth of fact, she made it 9 more months.
Wow.
And we celebrated her 40th anniversary, and we were married 40 years and 7 months to the day.
Wow.
And before she passed, she was able to complete every milestone in that year, every birthday of the family, every biblical holiday she completed. And in fact, she passed on the 8th night of Hanukkah that year in 2017.
Wow.
And we since learned afterwards that she had actually had that cancer for 5 years.
Wow.
And it was only discovered in the last 9 months.
Amazing.
In her last year was it discovered. She had been so healthy and yes. Even though she had it, she maintained,
wasn't aware
of it at all.
Yeah.
So the quality of life was excellent right up then. She really wasn't totally bedridden until in the last weeks of her life. So, you know, God was very gracious in giving quality of life to her for the days that she lived and so forth.
Bless her. Yes.
So that was then moved into, okay, what do we do now?
Right.
And, you know, I went through the normal grief status, you know, learned more about grief than I really ever wanted to learn about.
Absolutely.
And then I discovered something incredible about the Lord. I found out that not only is the Lord capable of giving sight to a person born blind, not only can he cause a man who's born lame to be able to walk, but he's also able to bind up the brokenhearted.
Yes.
And I found out what it was like to be brokenhearted, where you just are, it's debilitating. It's just, it just takes everything out of you. You just all fall apart.
Yes.
And I appealed to the Lord, and I said, Lord, this is what it says about you. I need that.
Yes.
You know, like the blind man needs to be able to see, and the lame man needs to walk, and the leper needs to be cleansed. Mm-hmm. I need my heart to be
put back
bound,
together.
Put back together. Yes. Again. And it was the Lord brought some very encouraging word. Three different sources contacted me, and you know, were speaking into my life words of encouragement. And they all three said, they didn't know each other, and they all three said that the Lord was going to do even something more with me and my ministry than what he had done before.
That's right.
Which was, okay, that's good. That's encouraging. That sounds good.
Yeah.
But at the point where you're at in the lonely, brokenhearted part, it's like, it doesn't really lift you very much. It's, you still have to endure what you're going through, you know, and so forth. And it finally, at 1,000 days, it's interesting. I was sitting on my patio one night talking to the Lord all by myself. And I finally sat down with the Lord and I said, you know, Lord, I think I've kind of assessed my situation. And what my biggest problem right now is, I'm just lonely.
Yeah.
And I said, by the way, you said it's not good that man be alone.
That's right.
And this loneliness thing, it's pretty powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I said, is there any chance you have another companion in mind for me? I mean, you gave a new wife to Abraham after Sarah.
Right.
Is there any chance you have something further scheduled for me? Now, how in the world who that person could be, because I'm in the middle of ministry, active ministry.
Right.
Whoever this person is going to have to be spiritually very mature in the Lord, very capable in the Lord. And so not only does it have to be a female breathing and still alive at my age category, but it's got to be somebody that you've been working with spiritually and so forth.
Yes.
Well, lo and behold, there's a call that comes in the ministry, a lady who's needs counsel. And I went on a trip, and I came back, and I called up, what's the counsel you need? She was getting divorced. You know, she had, the events had already taken place, and she was had a Torah question about that. I gave her an answer to it that seemed to satisfy her. And she, it turns out, she had been under my instruction for like 12, 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
She had been to my Sukkots. I had mikvahed her. I had done a wedding renewal with her husband that she was getting divorced with. I didn't really quite remember her, but she certainly remembered me. And she felt I was trustworthy for those issues. Well, one thing led to the next as a follow-up to the counsel. Why it was about encouraging her how to handle her affairs correctly and use professionals. Then she says, I need to move to another location. I'm going to go check out several different locations. And I said, well, you know, a lot of people move here to Oklahoma, join the local area here. He said, so we have an active community here. And so I might check that out. Well, lo and behold, make this a long story short, she decides to make an exploratory trip. It didn't take us very long for us to determine that the Lord was doing something.
Yes.
And a destiny for her, a destiny for me. And it wasn't too long after that that we got married. And I just got through celebrating 4 years of marriage.
That's right.
With Rita. And she's been trained by me spiritually, very active in ministry for many years, very spiritually mature, able to understand what we do here, what I'm about, and able to support me in doing it.
Isn't it wonderful how God works that way?
Well, it just goes to prove you another evidence of God's taking care of me.
That's right.
He knows what my needs are.
That's right.
And he's keeping me on course.
It's fascinating to me that in both marriages, they were fast. 12 days, I think you told me, with Lynn.
12 days with Lynn. I met Lynn, and we were engaged 12 days later.
Yep.
Yeah, and
Rita was the...
Not quite 12 days, but it was fast.
A relatively short...
Faster than other people would do it.
Yes. Isn't that interesting that God just says, hey, this is what you need, and you need it right now?
Well, I guess it goes along with my temperament. You know, my temperament is very choleric.
Yes.
Now, let's get things done now.
Yes.
And I'm a decision maker. I don't hesitate a lot. Let's get the facts on the table. Mm-hmm. Let's make a decision. Let's move out.
Yes.
Let's do it. And so it fit my temperament.
Yes, indeed.
You know, to be able to do that. And it's been successful.
That's right. Well, here we are, present day, come full to 2025.
Right.
And gosh, I can't believe we're saying that out loud, but we are in 2025. And Line and Lamb Ministries has come all the way from a home-based newsletter ministry once a month, all the way to an international reach now. We have our Shabbat evening service online. We have a few programs online. We have the Yavo magazine that goes out, large subscription. And we also have our streaming channel now that's reaching a worldwide audience, as well as our other media that reaches a worldwide audience. It's just amazing.
You know, back when I was a good Christian guy, navigator guy, there was a guy that I used to listen to on the radio, J. Vernon McGee.
Yes.
And he was a big Bible teacher, and he taught a radio program through the Bible.
Yes.
I used to listen to him on a regular basis, and he used to talk about that one day he hoped to be in heaven, that he was going to lead a Bible study, and that, you know, he'd love to teach the Bible. And when he passed, he had enough teachings that had been recorded that his radio program continued on beyond his life.
Wow.
And I took note of that, and I said, as I got started in Lion Lamb Ministries, you know, if I keep doing this long enough, we're going to get a library of teaching.
Yes.
And maybe, just maybe, we could get enough to where that it's prolific enough, and there's enough of it that it kind of goes out, and so forth. And we seem to be on the brink now with Lion Lamb Ministries that we have enough teachings and recordings that have been done of the teachings I've done over the years, both Torah teachings, topical teachings, book teachings that we have done, that we have a whole variety. And through the internet, being able to get out with that and with podcasts and our own internet subscription services, we have then a huge library of all this stuff. In fact, it's been kind of funny for us. Every once in a while, you guys have been bringing up, well, you got a teaching on such and such, and I go, I do?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
In fact, that happened with your teaching on Matthew.
Yeah, I said, I taught Matthew. Did I really teach Matthew? You know, and I guess we've come to the point where it's starting to get the add-on effect.
Yes, I think you're
you
right.
know, as the multiplication effect of it, and so forth. The wonderful thing is that at various junctures, to get a little feedback from people where they'll send me a message back and say this particular teaching was encouraging to them,
yes,
helped them, and so forth. And I've gotten a number of notes and letters sent to me from people all over the world expressing that kind of a testimony. Yes. Can I tell you about the one that really got me, though?
Please do.
I got a letter from a man in Africa, and he wrote me a letter telling me how encouraged he was by the word that I had shared, the teaching I had done, and that he had shared it with the group and the community where he was at, and that the entire community had responded to the Lord because of the message.
Wow.
And the message that he heard was that first message, "Here is wisdom."
Wow.
The one that was done in Dallas, the very first public one that was done. Here was a decade later
Wow.
in Africa and somebody's hearing it for the first time and it's still having an impact.
Yes.
That's truly the pebble splash.
That's what I was just thinking.
Turning into the tsunami.
And traveled all the way across.
Traveled all the way over there. And finally, it's still having an impact.
Yes. And still we are.
And still is.
The teachings that come out of the ministry, both from the past and the new ones that the Lord is giving you all the time, are making their way into places where we might not have even imagined.
Rita has one of the original Torah teaching sets that was back on CDs mm-hmm. 25 years ago.
Yes.
And she listens to them on a regular basis. And she'll every once in a while, she'll come in, you got to listen to this.
Yes.
She's telling me I need to listen to it. Says, this is good stuff, what you taught here.
And that's right.
It's still getting some benefit, from it. And that's amazing to me. And that to me is another confirmation from the Lord. Yes. Because all I ever asked the Lord was, don't let me embarrass myself. Don't let me embarrass you, Lord. Don't let me embarrass my family. Use me in some way. It doesn't have to be a big, gigantic thing, but yes. I just want to be used by you. And to get that kind of feedback, it's confirming that what yes. I put my life into, that it has had some value
yes.
of some sort for the kingdom. That's all I ever wanted to do.
Well, and one, as we come to the close of this episode, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about one of the things that has been so impactful, and I really think is a hallmark of your ministry, is the teaching that the Lord gave you and the insight on the greater Exodus. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the greater Exodus, when I, as an evangelical Christian and involved with the Baptist, the hot topic that got everybody's attention was the pre-tribulation rapture, the sudden imminent return of the Lord. Everybody's looking for it. Well, and I was into that. I used to teach that. I believed that and so forth. But the Lord had said to me, and this I shared this in the previous program that we were interviewed, what if everything you've been told about God was wrong? What would you do, Monty? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a pretty important subject about eschatology. What if you've been told about eschatology and it's wrong?
Right.
What if there's another plan? God has another plan. You need to know what the plan is
exactly.
that God has, not what everybody's expecting.
Yes.
So it was at the brink of that, and here is one of those moments again. I am up sharing, and out of my mouth the words come, you do know that the ancient story of the Exodus out of Egypt is actually a prophecy that will happen to the last generation. And I was like, what?
What did I just say?
What was that? That the story of the ancient Israelites coming out of Egypt
yes.
is a prophecy of what will happen to the last generation.
That's right.
When you get to the end of the book of Deuteronomy, you get to chapter 30. You have Moses not talking to the children of Israel standing there. He's talking to the last generation.
That's right.
And he's telling the last generation that the day is coming when God is going to gather up all of Israel from all of the different nations that they've been cast to. He's going to gather us up and he's going to take us back to the land. Then you have Ezekiel. He's talking about the same thing. You've got Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. Jeremiah chapter 16, chapter 23, he says, concerning this subject, he says, the day is coming when you're going to use the word Exodus. You're not referring to ancient Egypt.
That's right.
You'll be referring to when God, specifically the Messiah, is going to gather all of the saints from the four corners of the earth and bring us all back. And again, it's another Exodus scenario, mm-hmm. not a rapture.
That's right.
So the book that I wrote called The Greater Exodus also could have another title. We also could call it The Final Redemption of Israel.
Yes.
Because the eschatology that is taught to the Jewish people is called The Final Redemption. And they believe there's a day coming when the house of Judah has come back to the land, but there's a day coming when the house of Ephraim is going to come to the land too. By the way, that's what Ezekiel says. I will bring the house of Ephraim, the house of Joseph.
That's right.
Join it to the house of Judah, and they'll become one in the hand of the Lord. And the Messiah is credited with doing this. So here we are in the last days. And the house of Judah has been reestablished in the land. And by the way, many Jewish believers are becoming believers in the Messiah in the messianic ministry that's happened in the last 40 years. And yet there's still other people that are coming to faith, and we're talking about them coming back and being a part of it. So the modern messianic movement is the raw elements of the greater Exodus,
mm-hmm.
the calling of the 144,000,
yes.
all of the events that we were spoken of in the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, that's the information that I got way back a long time ago. This is what's going to be happening with the people.
That's right.
And so I've given you the understanding of these things to be able to speak to it. So when it comes to the subject of the events of the Great Tribulation, not necessarily leading up to it, but the events in the Great Tribulation, he gave me an understanding about what are those events, why are they going to happen, what is the sequence of the events. Why does it transpire? And basically, it's the book of Revelation and all the other prophecies all put together about the end of the ages. And there is a great deliverance that is planned for God's people, but it's not we escape and fly out of here. It's a great deliverance, just like the generations that came out of Egypt.
That's right.
And they'll be protected and led by it. So in my own personal walk of how God walks along with me and takes care of me and meets my needs, I see the same thing happening for the last generation
yes.
coming forward. So essentially the thesis that I have put yes. together in my ministry is that in that book, The Greater Exodus, and it lays out all the prophecies that talk about this phenomena
yes.
To take place. And it is completely different from what you would read from other prophetic books.
That's
and
exactly
other
true.
Ministries that are prophetic
yes.
that talk about this thing happening or what Russia is doing or this is doing. No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm talking about is what have the prophets of Israel said? What did Moses say would happen?
That's right.
And speak to that for this generation.
Yes.
And we can see the elements of what the prophets have said. They are taking shape in the world today, but it's a completely different set of observations and
yes.
criteria you don't get from a lot of paperback prophecy books or other messages like that.
Truly groundbreaking. It really is.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit shocking.
It's very shocking.
And quite honestly, if you are stuck in the tribulation, pre-tribulation mindset of the rapture has to happen,
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult to mm-hmm. lay that paradigm down and step over to what did the prophecies actually say?
Yes.
It goes back to what has, if I could summarize here real quickly.
Yes.
What happened the first time the Messiah came? He came to a people that were looking for the Messiah to come, but they had their expectations in the way of the prophecies.
Right.
They were not able to hear the prophecies. They couldn't process the prophecies because they had all these expectations. The wise men showed up in Jerusalem and say, where is he to be born? The wise men or the religious men says, in Bethlehem. Well, wait a minute. How come the religious men didn't make the trip down to Bethlehem if they knew that? Well, because, you see, it didn't meet their expectations.
Yeah,
it says that prophecy about Bethlehem, but we all know Jerusalem is the city of the king. Surely the Messiah will come to Jerusalem, check in with us, we'll certify him.
Right.
He'll determine that we're in charge, you know, and that's the way it will work. I mean,
yeah.
that's their expectations.
Right.
No reason for us to go down to Bethlehem and chase that out. Only the problem is that when the Messiah came, he didn't meet their expectations.
Right.
He just came and fulfilled the prophecies.
That's right.
And I would suggest to any end-time believers at the moment, God's not going to come back and meet your expectations.
No.
He is going to come back, though, and fulfill a whole bunch of prophecies.
Yes.
And what I think that we should be focusing on is lay down our expectations. Let's just focus. What did the prophecy say?
That's right.
And then let's see that happen.
That's right. You know, I always say, when my family and I lived in TV land, you know, before I came here and worked here with you, we were not pre-trib believers. We did had come already to the post tribulation belief about the resurrection. However, learning about the greater Exodus and that it's actually scriptural. It's not your theory. It's what God gave you from His Word.
Right.
And so when you are listening to the teaching and you're looking at the scripture and you're saying, I've never seen that before.
Right.
Oh my goodness, it really does say this is what we're going to be doing.
Right.
And it really rocks everything. I think I was sharing you before that it kind of changed the way my family and I were talking about preparing for the end days. It really shifts everything. And to that end, you also produced another book called The Tribulation Handbook.
Right.
Which is a guide.
Which is more practical.
Yeah, practical.
How to implement some of this stuff.
Yes. And folks, just so you know, we have both books at the Messianic Marketplace. So check that out. But wow, such an impact those two books have made. I know people still write to us, and I get emails and phone messages all the time about, hey, I'm reading the Greater Exodus, and I need an answer to this piece of it, kind of thing, where people are really starting to dig into that and understand that the Word really does say that we are going to go on another Exodus.
Yeah, Christians have a tendency, when we pick up the Bible and start reading the Bible, anytime you get into the prophets of Israel.
Yes.
Okay, we're talking about the big prophets like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and so forth. We don't read those books. We take those verses and we make plaques. We sell them in Christian bookstores. And the other minor prophets, don't even wade into that. Don't even try to deal with that. Mm-hmm. That's some sort of mix of history that nobody wants to know about.
Right.
And so we look at all of it and we say, well, you know, I think it carries some of the themes of God.
Yeah.
You know, it's thematic, but, you know, we don't pay attention to that. That's not really very precise. That certainly doesn't apply to me.
Right.
You know, directly or whatever. Well, lo and behold, what you need is you need somebody to open the scriptures up to you and show you exactly what the prophet said about you.
That's right.
And start by, did you know Moses talked about you being in the last generation? Did you know his last discourse? He's not talking to the people there in the wilderness. He's talking to you and me.
That's right.
And he's warning you and me to not make the mistakes that the other generations have made, and that this is what's getting ready to happen.
Yeah.
And from that, it springs into the other prophets and so forth.
Yes.
So when you get to the book of Revelation and you've heard what the prophets had to say, all of a sudden you go, wait a minute. What they're talking about in the book of Revelation is about that stuff.
Yes.
I had a Jewish rabbi who specialized in New Testament understanding. He was an Orthodox rabbi. Mm-hmm. And he specialized in the New Testament expressly for the case of to argue against it and to try to nullify its message. I got to hear his presentation, hear his arguments. Of course, they're not sound arguments. They could easily be dealt with. But I had the opportunity to ask him the question. I said, what do you think of the book of Revelation? I'll never forget his response to it. He said, it's a stolen book. I said, stolen? What are you talking about? He said, there's nothing new in there. Everything that's in there has been spoken of by the prophets of Israel before.
That's right.
And the light bulb went off with me.
Yes.
And I said, I've never put it in that words, but he's absolutely right.
Yes.
Now, you want to understand the book of Revelation? Go back and find out what the prophets had to say to begin with, and then the book of Revelation makes perfect sense.
It falls right into place.
See, it turns out that Revelation is just the grand central station of all Bible prophecy.
That's right.
The trains coming in and out.
Yes.
You know, the station. Well, the railroad is described back here by Moses and the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
And when Moses and the prophet spoke, they not only spoke of the days that they were in, but they spoke of the days future when the Messiah would establish his kingdom.
They sure did.
And there's a lot of information in there that is about the last generation just before the Messiah establishes his kingdom. So that's primarily what that book is attempting to do. It's to open that up. That's the experience that I had when I said that I learned the Bible all over again. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the Bible that I learned all over again was all of the prophets.
Wow.
Not what I were told in other little commentaries about. Yes. I read what the prophet said and suddenly saw what they said and understood what they were talking about.
Amazing. Just amazing.
So that's what the book is, to explain what did the prophet say and what did he prophesy?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, Monty, we have come to the end of our episode. Folks, I hope that you've enjoyed this wonderful time with Monty as he's told us about his life and how God has really used him along the way, even from a small child, all the way till now, to bring the word, the true word of the gospel to you and to many, many others. And we just pray that it would be a blessing to you. And Monty, I want to thank you. It's been an honor to talk to you about your life.
Thank you.
And the happenings in your life. And would you close us in prayer?
Sure. Father, thank you for this program. Thank you that we have a program that we can invite others to come in and share some of their testimony, how God's using them. Thank you, Lord, that I had an opportunity to share my own testimony with the folks about from my youth until this present day. And I've always asked, Lord, if you just use me in some way in your kingdom to increase your kingdom and to increase the profit of your kingdom. Use this program, Lord, to speak into the hearts of your people and encourage them to. And thank you, Lord, for all, again, that you've done for me. Thank you for the life you've given to me. It's been a good one. I've enjoyed it immensely. And I look forward to the future days with many more brethren. We pray all of this in our name of our coming King and Master, Yeshua of Nazareth. Amen.
Amen. And folks, tune in to the Lion's Share. New episodes will upload Thursday nights at 7 p.m. about every other week to start with. And we're bringing many leaders to you for you to get to know them at a deeper level that possibly than you already do. And we hope you'll enjoy these episodes and the people that you'll get to meet. So thank you again, and we'll see you next time on the Lion's Share.